There are some things that are outside of our awareness, some things that we're only partly aware of, some things we're very aware of. And the more we are aware, the better we can make choices, the better we can navigate our lives, the more we can let a little light into the blind spots that are there sometimes, the more we have to work with. And as we do that, it really affects how we feel about ourselves.
Hello, critical thinkers. Welcome to this new episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Here we question the conventional, explore the unconventional, and seek truth in health and wellness. I'm your host, Mike Vera, board-certified health coach and founder of Avantia Health Optimization. Today, we're talking with Dr. Michael Arlosky, and this is someone I think everybody who is interested in health or accomplishing their own goals should know about. He is really the pioneer in my field, which again is board certified health and wellness coaching. And nobody does it better than this guy. And I'll tell you a little bit about his background and accomplishments. But in this episode, we dive into influence, how we can be influenced by others, how we can influence ourselves, and how a big antidote to being influenced by others and being able to accomplish our own goals is being awake. So if you've ever had a health goal or just something in general that you wanted to accomplish, that requires behaving in a certain way. It might mean behavior change, shaping out of a pattern that you might be stuck in. That's what us health and wellness coaches help people with. And this is the guy that helps train those health and wellness coaches. So now let me tell you a little bit more about him and his background. Dr. Michael Arlosky has authored the foundational text, Wellness Coaching for Lasting Lifestyle Change, which is the first comprehensive book on wellness coaching. He is a key figure in the establishment of the National Board for Health and Wellness Coaching. He has contributed professionally to the field of wellness coaching and health promotion since 1979. He spent 17 years integrating wellness programming into the university settings at Miami University and the University of Northern Colorado. He's a renowned public speaker and trainer, delivering keynotes and workshops across four continents on the art and science of wellness and health coaching. He advocates for lifestyle medicine through coaching methodologies that support sustainable health behavior change. And he's a really great person to talk to. I think you're really going to love this episode, again, especially if you want to work on your health. So without further ado, let's get into it. All right. Well, Dr. Michael Arlosky, you were the first person, I believe, to take the ICF core competencies and apply them to health and wellness for the board certification that I have now. So I want to, right off the bat, thank you for your work. And I know your books are very central to the field. I have them here. Here's the first one, Wellness Coaching for Lasting Lifestyle Change. And I'll admit, I just got this. So I've only just started reading it. This is Masterful Health and Wellness Coaching, Deepening Your Craft. So again, thank you very much for the work that you do.
Oh, hey, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here and reach so many people.
Now, I got into health coaching because I saw it as a way to challenge the status quo. That's kind of the person I am. I saw a broken medical system, more of a sick care system. A lot of people even articulated they're not getting the help that they need. And I saw health coaching as a means not necessarily to fix the broken system, but the beginning of a movement towards a new system. So I think maybe a good place to start is, what's your overall assessment of the current landscape in the world of health coaching today?
Well, it's a very exciting landscape, to say the least. And for me to witness the growth of it has been astonishing and incredibly rewarding at the same time. And I'm also very hopeful for the continued applied use of it in many different settings and with many different populations and reaching a lot of people that way. I mean, one of the things that you pointed out from this system we have is we have way too many healthcare professionals that don't have the time to talk about people's behavior. And other than when someone has a pathological condition or some kind of extreme problem where maybe a mental health professional could be involved, other than that, we're usually not equipped for the kind of structure that allows the time available for a physician or a nurse practitioner or someone like that to sit down and talk about this lifestyle prescription that's so easily handed out. Oh, you need to lose weight, stop smoking, drink more water, get more rest, and somehow magically manage stress. A lot of great admonishments. But as we know, admonishment doesn't change behavior. If anything, it may make a person feel worse because they're struggling to succeed at those things. Maybe they've had a lot of failure experiences with exactly those things. So what health and wellness coaching can do is actually provide an ally to help someone accomplish these changes and have the time to actually talk about that person's attitudes, beliefs, and behavior so that they can succeed in making those changes happen.
It's been pretty neat watching medical doctors. I work with some of them. I know many of them who have recognized that gap in healthcare, and they've made the effort to, I mean, after all their medical training, to go above and beyond and get that board certified health coaching credential. And that's very cool. And even as it grows and emerges, we're still kind of in this spot where, and I'm going to apologize because I know you've been asked this question a million times, but I'll tell people that I'm a health coach and they'll think that I'm a personal trainer or a dietitian or they think that I'm going to tell them everything they're doing wrong and I'm going to assign to them everything they should be doing instead.
Right.
And we know that health coaching is quite different. So I'd love to hear your answer. What is a health coach really?
Well, one of the things they're not is what you just described, and that's a consultant. But yet, most everybody is used to working with a consultant. You have a medical consultation. You have a legal consultation. You have a consultation with your home decorator or whomever. I mean, your mechanic is your consultant. I mean, that's what people are used to working with. And a consultant asks great questions, hopefully. Maybe they even have some real coach-type style to it, if they're a good one, in order to gather information for them to process it. And then make recommendations. And that's what people are usually looking for. So one of the things a health and wellness coach has to do at the very beginning is what I call create the alliance. And creating the alliance is all about trust. It's all about competence. It's all about explaining to the person how health and wellness coaching is different. And to be able to say, what is the coaching value proposition? You can't just say, well, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm not going to tell you what to eat. I'm not going to tell you how to exercise. You're going to create your own plan, and I'm going to support you in it. And the person's like, and I'm paying this character money to just do that? I mean, come on. What a health and wellness coach has to be able to do is to be able to say to the person, look, you're really wanting to be healthy and well. Everybody wants to be healthy. And evidently, by coming to me, you're saying it hasn't been easy. So how about you and I work together to create a way forward that puts you in charge, but you're not going to have to do it alone. We're going to help you take stock of your wellness, take stock of what your strengths are, your assets, and look at your challenges. And then we're going to help you actually create a plan for moving forward that is based on your ability to change, your assets and what you have available to help you based on how ready you are to make certain changes. We're going to put together a comprehensive plan, and you don't have to do that by yourself. I'm going to really help you with that. We've got tools. We've got ways to help you really succeed with that. And then we're going to set up a way where you can actually set up goals and steps to take to accomplish those goals that are going to improve in areas of your life. And we can help you with support and accountability to follow through and get that done. You'll get support from me, but we're also going to help you find support out there in the rest of your life, because that's what really makes lasting lifestyle change happen. A coach has to be able to say that in their own words, in a way that shows that person, hey, this might work. This is worth doing.
In some ways, this podcast has been a double-edged sword because it's brought awareness to health coaching and how I help people. And that's brought people to me. And I love that and getting to help them. Now, on the other hand, it's also like some of the people who come to me, maybe they've heard an episode on a specific topic and they're almost like looking for a consultant instead of a coach. And right. so it becomes a song and dance where I still want to give them that coaching and I explain to them, but at the same time, I might have to concede a little bit and do a mm-hmm. little bit of consulting until they feel comfortable enough to get into the coaching. But yeah. when I think of coaching, and I think this is just how I'm wired, I do think about influence a lot. And we live in a world now where we're surrounded by it. I mean, every time we turn on the TV, we open up our phone, we talk to a friend, social media. I mean, it's everywhere. And one example I give a lot about how influence us, nobody can deny how it impacts us. I'm going into Target, the store, and I tell myself, I'm going to buy two things. That's it. I swear, two things. And we leave the store. We have a cart full of stuff, all this extra stuff. And very often that's things we know we don't need or shouldn't buy, like cookies or an extra pair of shoes when we already have 20. And so, I mean, that's deliberate. There are corporate executives who plan on how to influence us towards their goals.
They're counting on us.
Yeah, yeah. And then so my question is, if they can successfully influence us, why can't we do that to ourselves? And how do we do that? So my question for you is, what are your thoughts on the role of influence in health coaching?
Well, when we say that, we're talking about the broader picture than just health coach. I like to always term it health and wellness coaching. I've been involved in the wellness field since back when we handed out stone tablets at conferences. And really, the whole wellness field, the whole health and wellness field, is on the one hand about dedicated professionals helping people accomplish these things. And on the other hand, it is about sales and marketing in a trillion, multi-trillion dollar industry. And some people count everything from beauty products to Rogaine as a wellness product, right? I mean, it makes you feel better about yourself, right? If you have more hair. I mean, yeah, it goes on and on. So the opportunity is there. However, it's often very misleading. Something that you'll see like in all the media advertising is a portrayal of what it means to be healthy and well that's incredibly unreachable, unattainable, and unrealistic for many people. Because who do you see in those images? You see a 20-something-year-old high-fashion model, right? A guy who has starved himself to look like he has six-pack abs. You see a woman that is drop-dead gorgeous and probably has had a body type where she never had to worry about weight gain or anything like that in her life. So there is this misleading perception that healthy and well means a certain image, a certain look. And for many people, it creates misleading ideas about that and actually creates internal barriers. You know, we always talk about internal and external barriers to accomplishing someone's goals. Now, we have plenty of external barriers as it is. Not everybody has the access that they need to healthy and well food or a safe place to go for a walk or anything like that. But internal barriers are the tough ones because those are the attitudes and beliefs that we've internalized that tell us that we're not worth it, that tell us that it's okay for others but not for us, that tell us that somehow I don't deserve this or I feel guilty when I try to take time for myself. There's all those kinds of things. So if a person has kind of internalized the idea that being healthy and well means I've got to join a gym, wear spandex, go to a yoga class, and this and that, and for them, that's not attainable or even desirable. Matter of fact, it's absolutely repellent. What are they supposed to do? And if they've got a good coach or someone like that, instead, they can help discover for themselves ways to move, ways to eat, ways to be that fit with who they are, that are congruent with who they are. And that's going to work.
So I have more questions about influence, but what you said there brought up something else for me. And, and every once in a while, I'll have someone come to me for coaching and they'll list off some of the things that maybe they feel like they need to work on with their health. Let's say they maybe need to work on weight loss. They need to quit smoking. They need to do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, well, I mean, always they're guiding it, right? So it's very much under what they want to talk about and what they feel like focusing in on. Sometimes I feel like they might focus in on something like weight loss and never want to talk about the smoking that they're doing. Now, of course, as the trained and experienced health coach, they're the ones that have the power in these sessions. If that's what they want to explore, by all means. But I also feel a little guilty sometimes that I don't know if this is the best way to say it, but kind of letting them avoid talking about the smoking at all. I know that's harming their health. They know that. So both, because the audience is coaches and non-coaches. So how should we think about something like that?
Well, that's a time to plug in good old James Prochaska and Readiness for Change. I mean, you're talking about somebody where in one part, see, the thing about Readiness for Change, the big misunderstanding is people are a light switch. They're either ready to change or not ready to change. Total misunderstanding. It's different for every different behavior. The person can be all in on being more active. They can be all in on focusing on, like you're saying, weight loss. But when it's in that, they're maybe in the action stage, maybe they're in even the maintenance stage, or maybe the preparation stage. But when it comes to smoking, pre-contemplation, don't even want to talk about it. We have to accept that. But the way we accept it is to still include it in the coaching conversation. But our goal, if you listen to what Jim and Janice Prochaska have been saying for years, it's to simply move from pre-contemplation to contemplation, to simply start considering change. All right. If we plug in Miller and Rolnick's work on motivational interviewing, it's to just start to support the change talk. The little hints that kind of make you start to think, well, that person is starting to consider change in some way, some small way. We want to build on that. It's natural to hear what they call sustained talk that sustains things the same way. That's natural. So what we might do in creating a wellness plan with somebody is we may not work on, let's in your example, a smoking cessation. Person isn't ready to be really working on that overtly, but we may still keep it in the coaching conversation. And what we often find is that when the person succeeds in other areas, then they end up being more open to change in that area that they were in pre-contemplation about before. I'll give you a real good example of that. I worked with a client one time, and her main issue that I was seeing her was she was dealing with having had a stroke. And after that, it was sort of a wake-up call for her. She knew she needed to lose weight. She needed to really take care of herself. She knew she needed to really deal with stress in her job. Tremendous amount of stress that was going on there.
Hey, if you're someone with big health goals but find yourself struggling to get started, or maybe you used to be on top of things but you've fallen off track, you're not alone, and you don't have to settle for generic health advice. At Avantia Health Optimization, we design each plan specifically for you and your unique goals. Forget all the cookie cutter programs. We'll create a roadmap that fits your lifestyle and ambitions. In your very first $1 session, you'll be working directly with me, a board-certified health and wellness coach, as we dive right in together, mapping out a personalized plan that can cover everything from exercise and nutrition to sleep, stress, circadian health, time management, and more. Wherever you're starting from, we're here to take you from surviving to thriving. Get ready to reclaim your health journey by going to AvantiaHealthOptimization.com. You could also go to MikeVera.com. That's probably a lot easier. Or you can click the link in the show notes. Now back to the show.
And we had been coaching on that for a few months. Also, it was clear her doctors wanted her to quit smoking yesterday. Oh my goodness, you had a stroke, for crying out loud. So, but yet she really didn't want to talk about smoking cessation. So we worked on the other areas. She made progress in those areas. In fact, just before the winter break kind of time, when we weren't able to coach for about a month, we'd had this real breakthrough session about the stress that she was under, and she realized she was putting this stress on herself. I challenged her to talk to her boss about her stress, and her boss told her, quit working so hard. Anyway, it was really very successful. She came back like in February, I think it was, and she said, guess what? She said, very proud of herself. The last time I had a cigarette was after our last session.
Wow.
So she had completely quit on her own because she'd make successful change in other areas. That gave her the confidence that kind of blew away that low self-efficacy in that area. And now she went ahead with it.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. I'm glad to hear that, and I'm happy for her. Mm-hmm. And but it really does weave in nicely back to influence, I think, because some of what you described there, like the trans-theoretical model of change and sustained talk versus change talk, I see those as very strategic things. And it makes me think of like a sales pipeline, actually, because there's problem unaware. Those are the people who don't even know they have the problem, that we have a product to help solve that issue. Mm-hmm. Then there's problem aware and product aware. And it goes on and on through all these different phases that salespeople are basically trying to similarly nudge people towards the right, all the way to like, we bought your product. And the trans-theoretical model feels very similar to me, where someone is maybe in pre-contemplation, and we have to strategically, to some extent, be very careful about how we communicate as a means to shift them into that next phase. And that's what a good health coach can do. Mm-hmm. So I do see an overlap there. And that's where the influence, I feel, really comes in. And it brings up for me ethics. Not that I feel health coaching is unethical by any means. In fact, I think it's very ethical because the coach and the client are on the same page. They know what's going on. But I just can't get this idea out of my head, this strategic, deliberate effort that the client isn't fully aware of. I feel like there's a conversation to be had there. I don't have a specific question, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
No, I know where you're going with all that. You're talking about something I love to talk about, and you'll read more about it in that Masterful Health and Wellness coaching book there. I call it client-centered directiveness. I mean, there's this mistaken idea that coaches have to be completely non-direct. Well, guess what? The moment you ask a question, you're being directed. You have to answer my question in terms of the question. Therefore, I was directing it. Okay? The moment I offer you a tool to work with, I'm being directive. The moment that I suggest you track your behavior, I'm being directive. Okay, but it's the way that we do it. Do we say, well, you need to, you ought to, you should? Or do we say, what would be helpful to you here? Are you aware that there are ways that you can do this to keep track of your behavior? We're putting it in the client's hands. They are the ones in the driver's seat. So, and in terms of ethics, maybe this little funny, I'm somebody whose mind is always going into metaphors, right? And I always talk about health and wellness coaching as being in a car with someone, and the client is the one behind the driver's seat, in the driver's seat. They're the ones with the hands on the steering wheel. They're the ones with the foot pedals of the brake and the gas pedal. And we're kind of like the passenger seat, but what's a little different, we're not helpless over there. We're kind of like in a driver's ed car. Remember the driver's ed car that you were running around town in when you're 16? Thank God, if you were in the car that I was in with some of the people that were in the car learning with me, that instructor had a brake. So ethically, we can tap on that brake and we can say to the person who wants to do the 27 grapefruit a day diet, are you aware of some of the controversy about that diet? Do you know, where did you get your information? We can do that. It's being directive, but it's in the client's best interest here. So you can be directive as long as you keep it in a very client-centered way. And part of that is when you're helping to construct that wellness plan, you're literally co-creating it. And I always like to say to coaches, you are part of the co, all right? It isn't just, you don't have any input. you can still challenge, you can still ask questions, you can help increase awareness about different alternatives or choices. You can inquire what was behind, what was the reasoning behind a choice that was made, so that person examines it themselves. We're not trying to control it, but we're trying to make sure that they are reflecting upon it and really making their decisions with the greatest awareness possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. And something you said in another podcast, I think, really ties in with that well. And it was something like, the best health coaches have a strong sense of curiosity, creativity, and innovation. And I think that's one of the reasons I enjoy health coaching so much, is because I just innately feel like I have those traits. But shifting into something else, similar to influence, but a little different, and that's this idea of being awake. Now, we are here on Healthy and Awake podcast, and I think that term awake means different things to different people. But I've heard you previously talk about this idea of self-concept. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, "That I think that's being awake." So could you talk about that a little bit, please?
Well, to me, being awake is about awareness. And my training as a psychologist was very heavily influenced by Gestalt psychologists and people like Fritz Perls and others. And they talked a lot about awareness. And the idea that there are some things that are outside of our awareness, some things that we're only partly aware of, some things we're very aware of. And the more we are aware, the better we can make choices, the better we can navigate our lives, the more we can let a little light into the blind spots that are there sometimes, the more we have to work with. And as we do that, it really affects how we feel about ourselves. And self-concept is really important because as we believe who we are, so we behave. If somebody says, well, I'm somebody that just struggles all the time, I'm not very good at this and that, that's probably how they're going to experience it. It really has been found to be one of the most important things that allows behavior change to last. And that's an improvement in self-concept, a shift in self-concept. If I think that, well, I'm not very good at mechanical stuff, I'll give you an example. I grew up not really learning a whole lot about mechanics and all that kind of thing. I thought I wasn't very mechanical, wasn't very good at that kind of thing. I stayed away from it, really. And then I got into 10-speed bicycle riding. And this is back when we called it 10-speed bicycling in the early 70s. And when I went to Ohio University and my doctoral program, there was a young man there that had just spent his last year working as a full-time bicycle mechanic. And with his help, I learned how to repack my own bearings. I mean, I don't think I could do it today. I haven't done it in a long time. But it kind of blew away that I'm not this kind of thinking. Maybe you've had a similar experience. Like somebody says, well, I can't dance. I don't know how to dance. Yeah. And then you get out on the dance floor with this dance partner that says, hey, you can't do anything wrong out here. Just play. Have fun. And you discover, whoa, my feet are moving.
Yeah.
So one of the things we've seen is when a person goes to make a shift where they think, okay, I am able to do this. I'm more aware of my life now. I'm more conscious about it. I'm conscious about how I behave and how it affects my health, my well-being. I'm starting to notice that on the weekends, I don't just automatically do the same old stuff and spend all weekend by myself or just working on the household stuff. I actually think, what do I need this weekend? I need to be with some friends. I haven't been around friends in like forever. I'm going to consciously, purposely seek out some friends, go do something with them, arrange something ahead of time, make it happen. Now, I'm consciously thinking, all right, yeah, it would be nice to have the bacon with this, but didn't I have a BLT last week or a couple of days ago? Do I really want another piece of bacon here? You're starting to catch yourself because you're more aware and you're also more in touch with that conscious way of living. To me, wellness, my short definition of it, is living consciously. Really being aware enough to purposely, deliberately choose how you're going to live your life. Just turn off the automatic pilot.
I had a session recently where something like that kind of unfolded, and these are just the bullet points here, but I asked the person I was working with what their self-perception was at, and he'd expressed that he felt, his words, fat and unhealthy. And so I then asked, what do you want your self-perception to be? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I want it to be, you know, someone who works on their health and puts in the effort and mm-hmm. is mindful about food and does physical activity.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, we've been working together for 6 months now, and you've set goals around all these things, and you've done it, and you've done X, Y, and Z. I pulled up the list. I said, here's exactly what you've done. Here's where you yeah. started. Here's where you are yeah. now. And this person became very emotional in that moment. You could tell it was a very powerful experience for them, where it started to shift the way they looked at themselves.
Yeah.
And then they just started to crush it even more, and just from shifting how they looked at themselves. And it was very cool to watch, but even more cool just to know that they had that experience.
And see, that's one of the extreme values of an ally like a health coach, the acknowledgement. Acknowledgement is one of the underutilized and most powerful skills that a coach can have. We have to really be on the lookout for and aware of anything that is worth acknowledgement. It might be accomplishment of an actual behavior. It might just be the way somebody's character showed up, and acknowledge the courage it took to do that. Acknowledge the sensitivity it took to do something. But most people that we work with, and when you think about it, most people in life, don't give themselves enough credit for what they do. Or they think, until I accomplish the ultimate final goal, I don't get to give myself credit. Right? Like somebody says, oh, I got to lose 40 pounds. Until I hit 40 pounds, I'm a loser. Sometimes I joke around and call it Super Bowl thinking. Okay? If you're even passing awareness of the NFL, there's 32 teams. Only one wins the Super Bowl. So do you have 31 teams that are absolute losers? Absolute pathetic, wasted season, total goners, losers? No. Absolutely.
If you're an Eagles fan, they'd say yes, but that's right. Maybe a little different.
Yeah, but that's the common thinking, right? Well, unfortunately, we kind of apply a similar kind of thinking to different goals that we set. And it's like, until I completely accomplish it. Well, the reason, the way you get there, of course, is acknowledging all these steps along the way. You know, I never forget, I was working with a woman that needed and wanted to lose 100 pounds. And she lost her first 10 pounds. She got on the phone with me and she was so excited. Oh, she was like over the moon excited. And she says, I can't believe it. I just walked down the stairs today and my knees did not hurt for the first time that I can remember. Well, if you ask a physical therapist, when a person loses 1 pound, it takes 15 pounds of pressure off your knees. She had just taken 150 pounds of pressure off her knees by losing 10 pounds. And she was thrilled with that 10-pound loss, even though she was wanting to lose 90 more. She was giving herself credit for it. She was excited about it. I reinforced the heck out of it, celebrated it with her. And in the short time that I worked with her, not short, but over a reasonable number of months, she lost 60 of that 90 that she needed to lose.
That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you've been doing this for a while. I mean, you're at the top as far as health and wellness coaches go. So I'm wondering, what are some of the most powerful questions that you've found, like, really invoke a strong response? Hey folks, just a quick pause on our discussion today because I have something important to share. You know that I'm always in front of screens, so that's why I wear Bond Charge blue light blocking glasses. It's not just a stylish accessory, but it's really a daily defense against eye strain, headaches, disrupted sleep schedules, and really that circadian rhythm that I'm trying to protect. So it does protect your eyes. It does improve your sleep. It does help maintain your circadian health. And honestly, I've experienced fewer headaches and just a better overall sense of my health. I feel healthier when I wear these. And yeah, they do look cool as well. I get compliments all the time, especially when I wear them out at a restaurant or something like that. So for those who are looking to boost their health in this digital age, I've got some good news. As part of the Healthy and Awake community, you can get 15% off by going to the show notes, clicking the affiliate link, and using the coupon code Healthy and Awake with dashes. So that's Healthy dash and dash awake. And you can get 15% off of these very cool Bond Charge blue light blocking glasses. And that's a great way to enhance your daily health routine and your style. Now let's dive back into the episode.
The ICF, and the way we talk about competencies and everything, we always like to talk about powerful questions. And I always like to say, well, not all questions are powerful, but they all do some work. To me, a question becomes powerful when it really gets that person to stop and think, to really self-reflect, to really dig a little bit deeper. I like to say a good coach, their job is to infect their client with curiosity about themselves. Get that person to challenge and question themselves. Well, what is holding me back here? What happens when I do this? How do I react when this happens? Get them to really start examining that. So one of the things that I like to say that is super simple, but it's something that I think I learned to work with as a more of a gestalt therapist, and that is to simply ask the person, what are you aware of? And in the context of this, let's say the person is saying something really powerful. Okay. Maybe they emoted and said something about how upset they were or how disappointed they were or how frustrating something was, or they just explain something or get something off their chest. And I'll just simply say to the person, so what are you aware of right now? And that works 100 times better than how does that make you feel? When you say, how does that make you feel? A lot of the feel phobic people back up. Okay, well, I'm not supposed to share my feelings. I'm being too vulnerable with that word. But what are you aware of right now? That leaves it so open to the person. And what they often tap into is what they're experiencing physically. They say, well, I'm just aware of my jaw clenching. I'm just aware of my stomach being really tight. Or I'm just aware of something really emotional, like I'm just aware of how empty it feels, or whatever it might be. And that simple question, what are you aware of right now? Present moment, right here, right now. It's amazing what that can open.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm going to try it because I've generally avoided that question of how do you feel about that? Or how does that make you feel? Because feelings can be messy. So instead, I usually just go right to like, what do you plan to do with that information? Mm-hmm. And that kind of facilitates things, but it doesn't give them a moment to really reflect on it.
Right. It doesn't give them that moment to get in contact with the feeling. I wrote a blog just recently called Wading into the Lake of Emotions. And it's all about how a coach can work with somebody with feelings, with emotions, and do it safely. And this is a bit of a jihad for me because as a psychologist and as a coach, I've been very keen on coaches need to be able to work with feelings but stay within their scope of practice. I was actually the chair of the National Board's committee that developed the National Board for Health and Wellness Coaching Code of Ethics and Scope of Practice Statement and had some wonderful colleagues on that committee that worked on that with me. And the basic idea behind that metaphor, we're wading into the lake of emotions, is it's okay for you and your client to go into the water and get wet, all right? As long as you're standing on solid ground there on the bottom of the lake. But if you've ever waded into the lake, I was going swimming, you know that it gets deeper and deeper. And finally, you get to the point where to take another step forward, you have to start treading water a little bit. You can't really touch the bottom. Okay, do you have an agreement with your client to go swimming? Well, if you're a therapist, you do. If you're not a therapist, you don't. But your client may really want to swim. They really want to go further into that emotion because they're feeling it.
Yeah.
And your job is to nudge them back to where the feet are on that lake bottom, to where that coaching structure is there, to where you can explore feelings. You can talk about these things and talk about how relevant they are to the work that the person is working on in coaching. If you start heading into, well, we're going to resolve all these feelings. Resolution is the job of a therapist. That's deep water stuff. So that's kind of a metaphor to remember. Keep your feet on that solid ground underneath there. And you can go ahead, maybe even get in up to your neck if you need to, with your client as an ally. But you don't have an agreement, sorry.
Well, so on the note of feelings, as a coach or a therapist, I mean, that could be very heavy. Staying centered is very important as a coach or a therapist. I'm wondering how you personally stay centered.
Yeah, it's really about staying centered in your life, but also being centered in the coaching session. And one of the things that I teach a lot about is something that we call a compassionate detachment. And it's real easy to say those words, a little harder to accomplish it. But the exhaustion sometimes is on the emotional exhaustion level. And the way that we have to do that is by staying centered enough to be on solid ground when we reach out to our client who feels like they're in quicksand. Because it's not going to do any good for us to go crawl into the quicksand with them to help them out. We have to stay on solid ground. So how do we do that? Well, one is to kind of understand our role and obligation to be that person that can stay centered while our client is experiencing that difficulty, while they're, you know, in that state of feeling a lot less centered themselves. And it comes back to, I think, to a couple things. One, in the session, it's preparing for that session, getting ready for it by shifting gears, putting aside whatever other work you were doing, really familiarizing yourself with the client that's coming, checking your notes and stuff. But it's also tuning into yourself and your own body. Maybe sitting up straight, maybe focusing on your breathing a little bit, noticing when you're crunching your shoulders, tightening any part of your body. Just a quick body scan, being aware of that. But beyond all that, it's also about being centered in your own life. Are you doing what you need to do to rejuvenate yourself, to refresh yourself, to replenish this energy that you're putting out in these coaching sessions and whatever other work you're doing? We can express energy, but we have to replenish it. And we have to replenish it, and we have to nourish ourselves in an ongoing basis. It's like I can take a quick nap or relaxation for a few minutes, and I can refresh myself. I can replenish my energy. But I also need to be getting good sleep every night. Okay. So it's one's total wellness. It's one's personal wellness foundation. It's pretty hard to do this kind of work well if you're not practicing this wellness lifestyle yourself. And that doesn't mean you're perfect at it all the time. And it doesn't mean that you always, every week, are in perfect balance. No. Sometimes you have a week that just drains you. That's just too much going on. You've got all kind of things happening. Maybe you're in the sandwich generation with somebody to take care of that's older, somebody to take care of that's younger. Maybe you've got a particular workload that comes on for a limited period of time that's very intense. You have to be kind to yourself about all that. But overall, in the whole picture, is it evening out? Is it balancing out? And are you doing those things that get your needs met? That on all the different levels that we talk about, all the different dimensions of wellness. So that personal wellness foundation can't be ignored. And maybe discover different practices that help you with that. You know, I've been doing Tai Chi for 40 years now. Somebody else might do yoga or mindfulness-based stress relief, whatever works for you kind of thing. One of the things that I know is that for me, I have to be out in contact with nature periodically. It's funny, I remember my chiropractor saying to me one time after he was feeling how tight my body was, he said, "You haven't been out hiking or fishing much lately, have you?" So it's doing all those things.
As a kid, I always wanted to be a stand-up comedian. And I bring that up because for me, humor is a very important part of wellness. Yeah. And it's something that helps me stay centered.
Yeah.
And it really, I mean, even if heavy stuff comes up during a session, and especially if the client has a healthy and strong sense of humor, I mean, that's just the best.
Oh, yeah.
But it does, I feel, help me stay centered. It helps make things easier and more fun for both of us, I think. So what are your thoughts or what's your experience with using humor in sessions? Because it also can be kind of dangerous, too. I mean, humor, I think, is inherently risky sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. You know, from having the sessions that worked so well, they are almost inevitably ones that had a fair amount of humor in them. They are those moments that put things in perspective. A lot of humor is about perspective. A lot of humor is actually about empathy, understanding, common experience. A lot of comedians work on what we call recognition laugh. They laugh because, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember when something like that happened to me, too. Oh, yeah, I had an old friend that was really weird like that. That's what people connect with. And that, Ray B, is the word connect, connection. Because Jack Travis, that was one of the founders of the whole wellness field, loved to say that connection is the currency of wellness. And it's really true. You know, if you look at Brené Brown's work on empathy, what's it come down to? It comes down to connect. One of her most famous lines is, sometimes there's nothing you can really say. You don't know what to say, but just the connection with that person, letting that person know that you're there, it does the job. So it is about connecting. And I think that's the area of wellness that we as coaches have to really explore with our clients. How connected do they feel to the world around them, to other people, in their workplace? How isolated or connected are they? A lot of times what we'll find is that what's keeping people from accomplishing their health and wellness goals is that they don't have anybody to do it with. Right? And one of the best things that they can be doing in the wellness coaching, an area of focus to create goals on and action steps on, may be increasing connectedness. And it may take quite a bit. That person may be really reluctant to ask for help. There may be a lot of learning that they've had that has told them that's not okay to do. And that's something we can explore and help them work with. And maybe take the risk, maybe identify a higher probability person to ask to be a walking buddy, somebody that isn't going to turn them down as likely. Help them to really identify what's going to be a higher probability of success. And, you know, even get creative. I love to say that sometimes the connection may be a four-legged fitness trainer. I mean, there's actual research that shows that people that walk their dogs are in better health than people that don't have pets.
Yeah. Well, I suspect as we move closer into the future, and this goes right along with what you just said, AI is very much emerging. And I've actually been writing about AI and health coaching together since before ChatGPT ever existed. I mean, I've really been thinking of this for a while. Mm-hmm. And there are good reasons to believe that as AI continues to develop, those are going to be the companions that people go for. And I know people like you and I maybe find that hard to imagine, but this is what the younger generation is going to grow up with. And it does make me think about the future of health coaching, because there are companies out there who are kind of trying to replace that human element with robots. And I mean, there are companies that advertise themselves as like AI health coaching. And so I'd just like to hear your thoughts on that and just the future of health coaching.
Yeah, well, it's one of those, it's hard to say what will it really, where it will really go, what will really end up happening. But I think there's a desire to leverage the numbers. This has always been what disease management companies have been up against, insurance companies up against. They've got these thousands of people that are members in their programs. And how do you reach so many of them? And there are some folks that may be at a point where all they need is some sort of plan and accountability system, a good app on their phone to keep track of things, and they're good to go. A little more health information is accurate instead of all that misinformation that's out there. Maybe that can cover thousands of people for what they need right then and there. Maybe there's another layer where we can do group coach and reach a lot of people that way. But I think there's always going to be the person who has not been successful at self-help books and not been successful at all the things they've tried that they came across on an infomercial at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever else it was. They're going to need to talk to a real live person. And how can we simulate that? So far, anyway, it hasn't gotten so spooky that we have artificial voices that can replicate and actually be sensitive enough to pick up on the subtleties in the way the person is, what a person is saying, and in what they are not saying in those silences. That goes right past all the ones and zeros. Okay. And a real person, a coach, if they're well trained and learn how to do it well, they can pick up on that. They can respond to it. And hopefully, a lot of things that we can start to reverse is the absence of social skills that a lot of the people I work with in universities are starting to see in their undergraduate populations, because people have much more screen time than face-to-face time, person-to-person time. I'll never forget, I was working and training at one university, and they were talking about doing relationship coaching among peers, okay, other undergrads. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, one undergrad talking to another undergrad about going out dating and relationships. I was like, oh, this is a disaster waiting to happen. No, they weren't talking about that. They were talking about unmitigated communication.
Hmm.
That is where I'm not texting you. I'm actually sitting here talking to you and learning the skills to do that. They were discovering that a lot of undergrads that were coming into college had very little skill in that territory. And they were being thrown into situations in dormitories and classrooms and so forth and so on, where it was, they didn't know what to do. And it was pretty upsetting, or they would withdraw. Counseling centers, I used to work in counseling centers for many years in universities. They now all have these ridiculous waiting lists. So a lot of universities are actually training other students to be peer health coaches and to work with people on things that don't require therapy, but take some of the burden off of that counseling center where the therapists are, that has this staggering waiting list.
Hmm.
And that's something that my company and I have been working on with many universities to help them do.
That's so very cool.
It is.
It's really cool. I mean, I'm so grateful for what I've learned about how to communicate. It's made me such a better communicator and person, really, because I'm listening much more to the people around me. And I wish everybody could experience that. So it is interesting, and I agree with everything you said. I think that human element does need to be there just in general, whether it's health and wellness coaching or not. I do think we need that human connection.
Right.
And I also do understand the technology well enough to know that we will get to a point eventually where you could be talking to someone just like we're talking right now through a screen, and it would be indistinguishable from a human that, in theory, I do believe they could program something eventually to be sort of the best health and wellness coach in the world. I do believe that. And it does bring up a really interesting set of ethical questions. Like, if we did have the ability to mass health coach the population using technology that may eventually be very cheap, shouldn't we have an ethical responsibility to sort of put that out there if it does have the potential to really help a lot of people? Now, that's a heavy question that I don't think we have enough time to get into today. So maybe another day. But in the interest of winding down here, one of my favorite health coaching questions, actually, one of my go-tos for these types of conversations, if you had a magic wand and you could wave it and change one to three things about the status quo, what would you change?
I guess one of the things would be that I would really make healthcare accessible and affordable to absolutely everybody. I would take the profit motive out of it if I had that magic wand, and it would still be a huge industry that would employ many people and create great lives for a lot of folks doing that work. But I think the lack of making use of healthcare and mental health care when people really need it because they can't afford it, because it's just not available where they live, that's something I really wish we could overcome. And it may take a lot of work to do that, a lot of working together, and a lot of empathy and caring for each other to do that. But I guess that would be right up there anyway. Yeah.
Well, I'm optimistic we can get there sooner rather than later. I certainly hope so. But is there anything I have not asked you yet today, or anything maybe we should talk about that we haven't?
Well, I don't know if there's any shoulds about it, but it's been delightful, though, exploring all this with you.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Well, Dr. Michael Orlowski, where can people find out more about you and your work?
RealBalance.com. I've always talked about balance in life, and sometimes we have to be a little out of balance. Sometimes we have to be healthy and well enough to dance until the band goes home. You know what I mean? Not worry about being in balance all the time. So to me, real balance is about real health, real wellness, and living a real life that's very full and fulfilling. But yeah, that will help you identify all the things that we offer. We have trained over 15,000 health and wellness coaches all around the world, and we're still one of the leading coach training schools out there. That's the main thing that people really look to us for. You have mentioned about the books that we have. I've also got a blog that you can find at realbalance.com. And my blog has just got hundreds of entries that are all about health and wellness coaching and wellness. Also, I do a free month of webinar every month with some of the leaders in the field. We're going to be having Dr. Wayne Deisinger this month, and then Dr. Bill Miller of Motivational Interviewing fame next month. And then there's other months that I'm doing some kind of topic, but something else to tune into. So just go to realbalance.com. You can find out all of that.
And we'll put that link in the show notes as well. Again, Dr. Orlowski, thank you so much. And folks, stay healthy, stay awake. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Please remember to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple. Or if you're watching this on Rumble or YouTube, please be sure to give us a thumbs up and leave a comment down below. Let us know what you thought or if you had any questions based on what we talked about in this episode. And of course, it couldn't hurt to share it with your friends, those who maybe are awake or those, of course, who are waking up. Thanks again. Stay healthy. Stay awake.